From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The giant squid, one of the most reclusive species on Earth. Now, for the first time, we have footage of the legendary creature in its natural habitat, 3,000 feet down south of Japan. And sea monster stories, tales of the Kraken and whole ships pulled down. We've got the giant itself now up close on video. The woman who got it is with us, and more this hour on Point, all about the giant squid. You can join the conversation. Did the giant squid make you shiver as a child? Does it still? Do you want to see? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. For a generation and more, the giant squid was made, palpable? Only in fiction. Jules Verne's 1870 novel, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, had it front and center in high drama. Here's a scene from the movie made, early movie made from that book. The giant squid attacks the submarine, the Nautilus, and off we go. The narrator ends the clip.
Wasn't its body about 8 feet long? Very good, my boy. And did it not have eyes the size of dinner plates? Exactly. And was its mouth a beak, like a parrot's, only tremendous in size? Precisely. Well, in that case, there's one outside our window.
What?
Ned and the professor ran to the window. They saw a gigantic squid, at least 20 feet in length, moving with terrific speed straight for the Nautilus.
Actually, my mistake. That a reading directly from the Jules Verne 1870 novel, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. We're going to go in a moment to the woman whose lure snagged the video of the giant squid south of Japan. But with me first from New York City is Richard Ellis, research associate at the Museum of Natural History. He wrote the book on this effort back in 1998, The Search for the Giant Squid. He's also the author of the Encyclopedia of the Sea and many other books on marine life. Richard Ellis, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you, Tom.
So here we've got the giant squid coming front and center. The Discovery Channel is going to be showing a bunch of this video on Monday. Monster squid, the giant is real. This coming up on Monday. You've been looking at this for a long time. And when you wrote the book on this, Richard, back in the day, 1998 now, this had not been done. How long has the search to see the real live deal in its habitat been going on?
Contemporary science has probably been searching for the giant squid for, 30 or 40 years, maybe a little bit more than that. They washed ashore quite frequently for squid. They washed ashore all over the world. They were dead. They were just this blob of a creature with long arms. Usually the eyes were missing by that time. The crabs had eaten them or the birds had pecked them out. So we knew they existed. There was never a question, well, there was probably 500 years ago. There was a question as to whether or not they really existed. But as soon as people recognized what this was that was washing ashore, they knew that this thing existed. Expeditions were mounted in various parts of the world to try and find them using different devices to try and lure them into camera range. They occasionally would bait a hook, or they would light something up, or they would, in fact, in one instance, they strapped cameras to the backs of sperm whales, hoping that the sperm whales would find the giant squid and actually photograph them. That actually didn't happen. Those cameras on the sperm whales just recorded other sperm whales. So up till recently, no one had ever seen one alive. So the story of these expeditions, as outlined in my 1998 book called The Search for the Giant Squid, had in it probably any number of times the statement that nobody has ever seen one of these things alive. The book, unfortunately, at least that part of it, is now obsolete because we have seen them alive.
Of course, the reports have been around forever and ever. I mean, the legend and lore is full of this. I think it's Norwegian lore, where they've actually got this the Kraken that in Norwegian lore had come and dragged down Scandinavian ships since the dawn of time.
Well, It is a function of, I suppose, historical mythology, that if you saw one of these things on the beach, say a dead one, and it measured 30 or 40 feet in length, that is the length of the long feeding mm-hmm. tentacles, it wasn't all that difficult to fabricate a mythology about what the living one of these things might be able to do. And that's very different from what they actually did. There were Norwegians who saw them washed ashore on a more or less irregular basis, and the mythology developed around that. It didn't develop because somebody had ever seen a giant squid attacking a ship or a person or anything else. It developed because you saw this giant blob on the beach, and it must have been some kind of a marine terror. And so the mythology develops around these things, regardless of actual sightings or, in fact, regardless around actual biology. The same thing happened with other sea monsters like the Loch Ness Monster, giant man-eating sharks. You didn't actually have to see them in action. You had to look at a carcass, or in the case of the sharks, these giant teeth from a now extinct giant 50-foot-long shark, and the mythology began to develop around the corporeal reality, usually dead.
Jules Verne pushed it forward in a big way in literature. The movies took what he wrote and ran with it. From my childhood, that was so vivid, those pictures of the enormous sort of tree trunk-sized tentacles coming down into the Nautilus and twirling, was it Kirk Douglas all over the place with his harpoon in hand?
It was James Mason as Captain Nemo, Kirk Douglas as Ned Land, the Canadian harpooner, yeah. who ultimately dispatches this giant squid with tentacles down into the gangways of the submarine by harpooning it between its eyes.
Describe the scale and sort of physical anatomy of the real thing, Richard. We're going to hear in just a moment from Edie Witter, who was there for those first images coming up from deep beneath the sea. But just give us the picture of the giant squid, its makeup.
It has a cylindrical body. Depending upon the size of the squid, it could be as round as a good size barrel. Those mm-hmm. are the bigger ones. At one end of that cylinder is a pair of fins that it propels itself with. At the other end is this complex of eyes and tentacles, and in the middle of the tentacles there is a parrot-like beak. It is the functional definition, I think, of a sea monster, with writhing tentacles and giant eyes and a parrot-like beak and rising up out of the depths. This, all of that is true. Tangle of tentacles, giant eyes, yep. giant beak. All of that is what it actually looks like.
Eight arms, two longer tentacles with those hundreds of toothed suckers.
Toothed in a minor kind of a way. They're tiny little teeth, and they are the teeth that are responsible for the scars on sperm whales, which are usually about the size of a quarter at their largest.
Sperm whales who eat giant squid, and from the remains found in bodies and scars found on the surface, there must have been some epic battles over time between these two.
It probably is an epic battle only insofar as there would be an epic battle between a lion and a zebra. In this case, the whale attacks the squid trying to eat it. That they don't face off down there, one giant mm-hmm. against another. The squid is trying very hard to not be eaten. And in the process of trying to not be eaten, it wraps its toothed tentacles around the head of the sperm whale, often leaving scars. The scars themselves have been exaggerated to the point where in a book about octopuses and squid, Cousteau, the original mm-hmm. Papa Cousteau, mm-hmm. wrote that the scars were as big around as manhole covers, which of course would have suggested a squid of 300 or 400 feet in length.
Yeah, that would
but
be
they've
a big
never
one.
Been that big. They're only about the size of a quarter.
They've got the fins that aid in propulsion, also a kind of jet propulsion, right, with water moving through that main funnel of the body.
Most squid, including Architeuthis, the giant squid, can move in either direction, forward or back. They don't really have, except this is a tail at one end and a head at the other, they don't really have a front and a back because they have a funnel mm-hmm. that emerges from the body, which is known as the mantle, from which they jet propel water. And that's the real way they move. The fins really stabilize them. But they move by jetting in one direction or another. But because they can turn that funnel in forward or back, they can move tail first or they can move tentacles first. The squid that Edie Witter captured on video came in tentacles first, and it had its tentacles pointed together so that it looked like a single pointed object, and then it flares them out. It's an astonishing, astonishing sight.
Edie Witter got the video. We're going to talk with her in just a moment about that moment south of Japan. We've got just a tiny clip of it at our website, onpointradio.org. Check it out. Discovery Channel will show more this weekend. I mean, the thing that really struck, there are many things that are striking there, but that those eyes, Richard Ellis, they look the size of a human head. I don't know, the biggest in the animal kingdom, I read.
Probably, but there's nothing living that has bigger eyes than that. It is one of the factors that adds to its mystery and mystique. Anything with eyes as big as your head is going to be frightening anyway. And these are eyes that are designed to pick up the slightest bit of light. This is an animal that lives anywhere from 3,000 to 8,000 feet down, as far as we know. We don't know how deep they actually live. The videos that they got for this discovery special were at around 3,000 feet down, but we don't know whether the squid is capable of swimming to 8,000 feet down. This, we know where we found them.
Richard Ellis, stand by in New York, if you would, Richard. Edie Witter will join us right after this break. She used light in no small part to bring the squid to the camera. We'll talk about that. There's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea theme. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the giant squid captured on video in its native habitat for the first time. The squid, the beast, the legend. Here from Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, Will Turner, playing by Orlando Bloom, prepares to protect his ship and his love, Elizabeth Swan, Keira Knightley, against the mythological Kraken, or giant squid.
No. It's not a reef! Get away from the wreck!
What is it?
The Kraken! Two arms!
No guns! Defend the man!
It'll attack the starboard! I've seen it before! Spread out the cannons and hold for my signal!
Lots of legend and lore around the giant squid. An expedition has brought back video images for the first time, and in just a couple of seconds, we'll talk with Edie Witter, who was there for that. Richard Ellis is with us from New York City. He's research associate at the Museum of Natural History, author of The Search for the Giant Squid. And with us right now from Fort Pierce, Florida, Dr. Edie Witter. She's president and senior scientist at ORCA, the Ocean Research and Conservation Association. She was part of the expedition that captured the first video footage of the giant squid in its natural habitat. She's won a MacArthur Genius Award for her work on bioluminescence, and she put luminescence to work in the sea off Japan to draw in the giant squid. Edie Witter, Dr. Witter, thanks very much for joining us.
It's good to be here, Tom.
How did you draw this squid unto your camera?
Well, we used what we believed would be something that it paid a lot of attention to. With an eye that size, it has to be a visual predator. And there's not a lot to see in the depths of the ocean, but what there is bioluminescence. And there's actually a lot of it down there. And so I figured that they would be paying attention to bioluminescent signals, and I've spent a lot of time trying to figure out this language of light and what different types of bioluminescent displays convey. And one of them that I was intrigued by was something that's called a bioluminescent burglar alarm, because it's like the alarm on your car. The flashing lights and blaring horn are meant to attract attention, hopefully of the police, that will scare the burglar away.
This is the jellyfish application.
That's exactly right. So the thing that we were calling the electronic jellyfish imitates the bioluminescent display of a common deep-sea jellyfish called a tola that produces this pinwheel of light when it's caught in the clutches of a predator. And the idea is to attract in a larger predator that may attack its attacker and thereby afford the jellyfish an opportunity for escape.
And that larger predator might just be a giant squid.
Exactly.
So when I picture you having lowered off your boat, and this is south of Japan. How many miles south of Japan are we talking from?
I think it's over 600 miles south of Tokyo.
It's down toward Iwo Jima, that area, some pretty deep water there. You're out on the boat, and you lower down. In my mind's eye, it's some kind of version of the crystal ball that comes down on New Year's Eve in Times Square. But you describe it for us, Edie Witter. What did it look like, what you lowered?
It's a smaller version of that. Yeah, it's a 10-inch glass ball. Which is actually a housing that's used quite a bit in deep sea research because it's the sphere is very strong, and actually glass is surprisingly strong way to contain instruments. And so we just had a ring of blue lights powered by flashlight batteries, basically, but they were programmed to imitate the display of the Atolla. And we attached that to the camera system that we call the Medusa. That was lowered from a float and on a line of 700 meters long. It just floated around, down around 2,200 feet for a day and a half or so at a time, which was as long as the batteries would power it. And
was the light on constantly as it floated the 2,200 feet beneath the sea, Edie?
The red lights were on constantly, so we could see the squid, but it couldn't see us. And then the electronic jellyfish would produce that pattern for a minute and then go off for a minute and then come on for a minute.
And so there you are sort of trolling along. Now, you're actually on a kind of yacht owned by some hedge fund billionaire out there with this expedition. Are you moving as you do this or staying stationary? How?
Well, the camera system, the Medusa, as I said, it was attached to a float, and on the float was a satellite beacon.
Mm-hmm.
So we just released the thing and let it go off and float while we were doing our submersible operations.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we needed to recover it, we'd check from the satellite where it was and go find it.
So you would eventually see the video image of this giant squid. We'll learn how that happened. But before we get to it, tell us, I mean, if we had been down there and somehow as a third party watching this interaction of your bioluminescent glass ball or luminescent glass ball and the giant squid, what happened?
Well, Richard actually described that wonderful sequence where the squid comes in with its arms all bunched together and they slide up over the glass jelly. They don't attack directly on the jelly and then engulf the camera system. And that's exactly what I'd expect for a burglar alarm. It's not attacking the jelly. It's attacking whatever it sees as attacking the jelly. Although I do say I'm very impressed with its courage in attacking something that large.
When you say jelly, you mean the sort of virtual jellyfish here,
The virtual jelly, the electronic jellyfish, yes.
And here's the first moment. This is audio courtesy of the Discovery Channel of the first time our guest, Dr. Edie Witter, and her team see the giant squid. It took the team 55 dives in an expedition that was 4 years in the making. Here's the moment when it comes at that luminescent glass ball 2,200 feet beneath the sea.
What is that? Steve? Who?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, okay, so this is...
Oh, my God!
Oh, wow, look at that.
See, where are the...
Oh!
All right.
Oh, man, it's just hanging out there just outside the light, isn't it?
That's great.
Is there more?
Yeah.
Is it? Is it coming in again?
Oh.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yes, that is so cool. It feels like a privilege, Edie Witter, to hear that, to be via audio present at that moment when you scientists see it actually coming to your camera. What was that like, Edie?
Well, it just gave me chills hearing it again. it was absolutely amazing. The reason I became a scientist in the first place was the excitement of exploring frontiers, but initially, I was planning to explore intellectual frontiers. I never imagined that I would get an opportunity like this to explore a physical frontier and see something like that that nobody has ever seen before.
How much time did this giant squid spend with your luminescent ball?
Actually, just seconds each time it would come in. In fact, the first couple of sightings, it was sort of like it was teasing us. It was almost like a little fan dance. Here are my arms.
Yes, yes.
Oh, and here's another shot. And it was just thrilling the way it kind of built to the climax.
You must have looked at this video again and again and again and again. We have just little snippets of it available at our website, onpointradio.org. Much more coming on the Discovery Channel this weekend. And, of course, the Japanese and on sponsoring this as well. But describe for us, Edie, what you saw in the light of your mechanism all those meters beneath the sea.
Well, the first viewing, which actually the very first person to ever really see it was a graduate student, Wensung Chung, who was reviewing the tape while I was down in the submersible. And now Dr. Chung, by the way, he passed his exams. Mm-hmm. So he brought me up, but he was very cool about it. He did not let on. And they were filming because they filmed everything out there with NHK and Discovery Channel. So I really didn't think anything of it. So it was just absolutely incredible to see that for the first time and see those enormous arms coming in and just teasing us with how big the animal must be that was attached to those arms.
And the central body of the beast itself and its eye, or I could only kind of make out one from what I saw, but it looked enormous. What about it?
Yeah, it's an enormous eye. It's often described as being the size of a human head, and it really is huge. Now, if people tune in on Sunday night, they're also going to see high-resolution color imagery of the squid, which actually I never imagined we would get. But that was shot from the submersible, and
this was later after the first video came in.
This was later, and Dr. Kubadera had been using bait, and at this point he attached a flashing light to that bait for this particular deployment. It wasn't my e-jelly, but it was a squid jig light.
Okay,
and they were sitting down at around 700 meters and with just the red lights on, and they saw the squid come in on the camera because they could barely see anything looking out just with the red light
alone.
And
this is a manned submersible, so they're watching this with the naked eye.
Yeah, this is the Triton. It's mm-hmm. a three-person submersible. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's really important that it was a submersible. You could not have done this with a remote-operated vehicle, which is what a lot of people are switching over to these
days.
Why
could you not?
Because of the incredibly noisy thrusters that are used on mm-hmm. a submersible. Mm-hmm. And there was some very tricky piloting that went on by the pilot, Jim Harris, as the squid was hanging onto this bait, and he had to drop the sub at the same rate. And it would not have worked with a remote operated vehicle. And
did they capture all this on film too? I take it they did.
Yes, there's actually some very exciting sequences on film, and they really captured the whole experience.
What about the color of this? Oh, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, the color was just breathtaking and totally unexpected, because when you see deep sea squid, usually they're reddish colored, and there had been, as Richard said, dead bodies recovered or almost dead bodies, and they were reddish colored. So we weren't expecting this incredible silver and gold color of this fantastic creature. It, to me, looked like it was carved out of metal. And then there was that just absolutely incredible eye glaring back at the submersible, and you just could not help, when you look at it, feel like there was some cognition behind it.
Did it just go for the bait, Edie, or did it go for the submersible as well?
No, it was clearly going for the bait, and it was chewing on the bait, which is why Dr. Kubadera felt it was worth risking turning on the white light.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, these animals have a behavioral hierarchy, and once it's chowing down, it's not going to let go of that food, and at least that's apparently what happened in this case, because they turned on the white light and it didn't bolt.
As shocking as that white light may be, and the bait was what, smaller squid?
Yes, it was a diamondback squid that is a common food for giant squid.
This is just incredible. Richard Ellis, you must have seen a bunch of this video footage. Describe for us the drama of it.
Well, I watched the show itself. I've mm-hmm. seen a screener of it, so mm-hmm. I'm almost as familiar with the film itself as Edie mm-hmm. is. Mm-hmm. There are several elements in this film that are astonishing and in some sense ought to be explained, and I'm not sure they are. There's a shot in this film early on where Dr. Kubader is waiting for the squid to show up, and another squid shows up. They call it a Teningia squid. If you look really closely at that sequence, you will see the most extraordinary thing, and Edie, of course, is an expert on this. Teningia has light organs that are the size of lemons, and they light up, and when you see the Teningia squid, as they call it, you can see these blue lights flashing. That is the squid, the Teningia, flashing its blue lights. Mm. Another thing that's worth pointing out about the actual video is when you see Dr. Kubadera's actual video, when he saw the squid from the submersible with his own eyes, you see some strange shape sticking out of what would appear to be the front of the squid, the arms part. That is the bait squid. The giant squid mm-hmm. does not have a big triangular protrusion from its front. It's chewing on the bait squid, and many of the images show that, and it's very hard to read that as a bait squid. You think that's all part of the squid. It's basically the same color. So you're seeing the actual giant squid in action when Edie got the first footage and saw the first footage. You saw this incredible flashing and flaring of arms of the squid. Then finally, when Dr. Kubadera went down in the submersible and the squid came in and you saw it attacking the bait, it was the most extraordinary sight. I mean, I watched it alone. I was not with anybody else when I saw it.
Yeah.
And I was gasping out loud because it is such a revelation. It just shakes you to the bottom of your toes to finally see this thing and to see what it actually looks like and to realize now that the search is over, at least temporarily, because we have achieved, I didn't, but other people achieved this centuries-old goal of seeing the giant squid in action.
The speed and strength of this creature as filmed, Edie, what's your sense of it?
Well, actually, you know, Richard describes how it comes in on the Medusa. It's almost leisurely. It's not a super fast attack. You kind of feel like, well, this is the king of the roost down here. It's in no hurry. And then it, you know, turns its funnel as he described, and then jets off back out a little faster than it came in.
And you all had a sense, no doubt, of history being made at that moment as you witnessed all this.
Oh yes, we did understand that because everything had built up to that moment, and I think a lot of us were pretty skeptical of our actual chances of doing this, given how many people had tried in the past.
It is amazing, after all these eons that sailors and humans have talked about and sung about and imagined the giant squid, to finally have it on video. Not just that glimpse of a still photo, but actually right up close, right on top of the camera, and in the submersible's case, a camera with human beings right next to it, so far underwater. Edie Witter, it's great to have you with us. Please stand by there in Fort Pierce, Florida. Edie Witter was right there in the expedition on the boat off Japan. Richard Ellis joins us from New York City, author of The Search for the Giant Squid. Here's musician-comedian Jonathan Coulton with his song, I Crush Everything, written from the point of view of a lonely giant squid who can't even make friends with the dolphins. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
And the dolphins are all phonies. They seem nice enough at first, but they pretend to be your friend until they see you at your worst, and then they leave you without a word. They swim away. So I can't do that thing anymore. I can't be the thing I was before. Maybe I am better off alone, because I crush everything and I crush everything and I crush everything.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the giant squid captured on video in its native habitat for the first time. The squid, the beast, the legend, Edie Witter is with us. She's president and senior scientist at ORCA, the Ocean Research and Conservation Association, MacArthur Genius Grant Award winner. She was on the boat as the images came in. It was her luminescent sort of lure far beneath the surface of the sea that brought that giant squid into camera range, live in its native habitat for the first time, and more would come. She joins us from Fort Pierce, Florida. Richard Ellis is with us from New York, the Museum of Natural History there, author of The Search for the Giant Squid, and much more. There was lots and lots in fiction, film over the years. Here's a scene from the 1960s science fiction TV show Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea. Admiral Harriman Nelson, played by Richard Basehart, is listening to a report of a sea monster attack on the radio.
Admiral, there's a further radio report on the sea monster.
Thank you, Chip. Pipe it in.
The survivor, Johan Rolvag, describes the monster as a snake-like giant with mottled yellow and black scales and circular suction cups along its body. Attending physician reports that Rovag's body is a mass of circular welts and holes.
Okay, sounds like rubbish next to the real thing. Here's that response again as Edie Witter with us right now from Florida and her team first see the giant squid coming to the camera.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Oh. Okay, so this is.
Oh my God!
Discovery Channel will show you the whole thing on Sunday. You can see just a little bit of it on our website right now, onpointradio.org. Nona's calling from Tavola, Michigan. Nona, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Well, hi, Tom.
Hi.
I want to tell this Discovery person that she is like a hero to me, because all of my life I have rooted for, you know, said hurrah, for the poor animals that are made to be villains. I mean, even Jaws, you know, Godzilla. And she got, and I was so excited. I got goosebumps when I heard the recording of when they first saw that beautiful creature underwater.
Yes, amen to that.
I'm just giving her kudos. I have really no question except for that she really worked so hard. And she did it.
Kudos are fully in order. Nona, I appreciate your bringing them in here. I mean, people are looking at this video. Gary says, looking at the giant squid, that is a big mama jama. James says, incredible. As we scurry around trying to make our way through the world, it's easy to forget how many wonderful mysteries are still out there for those who look. Great, great stuff. Edie Witter, you brought it to us. And it seems to me you were able to do this in part because of your long study of bioluminescence. You were thinking about the kind of light that might attract and not just scare away in a hurry this great creature.
Exactly. Actually, I'd been concerned for a long time that we've been scaring away an awful lot of the creatures in the ocean, and so that has been a lot of my motivation. And I'm so glad Nona thinks it's beautiful, because I do too.
It's hard to deny, and those colors you describe, that is part of the camouflaging system of the giant squid, or is it a response to your light, or both, Edie, the gold and silver?
Well, we know that squid talk with their skin, and so it's probably part of its communication system. And I'd only have to speculate at this point, but it did seem to be changing color as we were looking at it, and so one might speculate that it was responding to this other large thing next to it and sort of indicating, no, this is mine.
Talking to the submersible in that case and the crew on board. Ed in Boston is calling. Hi, Ed, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air with Edie Witter and Richard Ellis.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, Edie. Hi, Richard. Is this Richard Ellis, the artist?
Yes, it is.
Hi, Richard. How are you? It's long time no see. In 1970, in the summer of 1970, my father was a PhD student with Oregon State University, and he was on a 160-foot research vessel off the coast of Oregon. And one night, at about 2 a.m., he was doing the night watch, and so one of the things was that the ocean that night was absolutely flat calm. So they took a boom, and they put it out over the side of the ship, and they put a light on it just above the surface of the water. And my father walked the boom and laid down at the end just to see what he could see. And now he was hoping to see, I guess, blue-tip sharks. I guess that's what his goal was. That's how he tells the story. And to the surface came a creature that he describes as being about 30 feet long and the creature broke the surface, and it was, he just says it was a creature with an eye the size of a dinner plate. And he believes, though he can't prove it, he believes that it was an Archaeopteryx.
Dr. Witter, let's take that straight to you first, if I may. And thanks, Ed, for the story. Does it sound possible, does it sound credible that it might come to the surface, maybe following a light, Edie?
Well, we certainly know that a lot of animals come to the surface at night. It's called vertical migration. It's actually the most massive animal migration pattern on the planet, and it occurs every single day. So animals hide in the dark depths during the day and then come up and feed in food-rich surface waters under cover of darkness. And sometimes very large predators follow that food up in order to be able to feed. So it's not impossible, but in general, we think that the giant squid tend to stay deeper than that and not come all the way to the surface.
Are there scientific surface reports, Edie, in the literature, or is it from, you know, just people who happen to be out there?
There are reports, and it's thought in general that more often than not, these are animals that are sick or dying that come all the way to the surface. They can still be alive, but not doing terribly well. But I don't actually have any problem believing it, that these animals do come up quite a bit higher than we account for, because the ways that we explore would tend to drive them down into deeper waters, so we wouldn't have the opportunity to see that very often.
Richard Ellis, how does this sailor's story strike you?
Well, I've heard many stories similar to that. Edie is correct, I think, that giant squid, Archaeopteryx, tend to stay fairly deep, and they look as if they're designed to stay fairly deep with those great big eyes. But in fact, many of them will come close to the surface, as Edie said, often to die, and that is the precursor of their washing ashore. You can't wash ashore from 5,000 feet down, but you can wash ashore if you're at the surface. I don't doubt for a minute that this was, if it was as long as this man's father said it was, it couldn't have been anything else. There's nothing else, no other cephalopod that's that big, although there are giant octopuses in off the west coast, the northwest coast of North America, but they're not 30 feet long. And so if it was 30 feet long, I had a great big eye, unquestionably a giant squid, and no really good reason to doubt that story.
Let's go to Deb in Avon, Connecticut. Deb, you're on the air.
Oh, great, great. I am so excited about this. So a question for our experts. I've been on a whale watch in Trinity Bay, Newfoundland, and the gentleman taking us out on the Zodiac, we found a sperm whale. We watched the sperm whale. It dove. The gentleman held a microphone in the water and had us listen to a kind of a clicking noise. And he said, well, that's the sperm whale. He's diving down to, he's being attracted by a giant squid, and they're going to be fighting, and he will possibly eat that giant squid. So is that a myth? Is it possible that that was what was happening?
Edie, how about it? Dr. Witter, tall tales on the high seas, entertainment from the whale watch, or does it sound legit to you, Edie?
I think the whale watcher has really harnessed the entertainment value of this. That's a whole lot of speculation on seeing a whale go down and hearing some clicks. It certainly happens, but whether or not that was what was actually happening in that case, I suspect probably not.
I mean, the giant squid, some of their sightings or findings have actually been in the bellies of sperm whales. So they clearly have them for lunch or dinner sometimes, Richard.
Yes, they do. If the person at Trinity Bay, Newfoundland, was in fact Peter Beamish, I have been up at that inn in Trinity Bay, Newfoundland, with Peter Beamish, and I must say that Beamish is much given to exaggeration. As Edie said, the facts of the matter are that sperm whales do, in fact, hunt giant squid. They don't locate them at the surface or from the surface, however. They have to be more or less in the same area where the giant squid is, and then they echolocate them with the sperm whale's phenomenal ability to send out sounds and then read the returning echoes. But in a sort of compressed and exaggerated fashion, Beamish, if that's who it was, was correct.
Richard, here's a question from a listener. Says, are there any modern documented reports of attacks on humans or vessels by either the giant or the colossal squid? The colossal, I guess, an even larger one, though not as strong. But what about attacks?
There are no actual records of attacks by giant squid or colossal squid. First of all, colossal squid is a jelly-like creature. It's very big, but it is very weakly muscled. The idea that it could attack people is sort of based on the same mythology that had giant squid attacking people, largely because they're so large, as it turns out. There is a squid much smaller than colossal or giant squid called a Humboldt squid, which is very aggressive. There are actually some shots of Humboldt squid in the early parts of the Discovery Channel special. They have been known to attack people, and they're very aggressive. They're very powerful. They're only 6 or 8 feet long, but they are considered quite dangerous. And it's my theory only at this point that some macho diver, you can dive with them off Baja California in the Sea of Cortez, where there's a big fishery for a jumbo squid, Humboldt squid, same animal. Somebody is going to get to be a little carefree, and think, I can dive with these creatures, and he will be attacked.
Let's go to Dave in Bloomingdale, New York. Dave, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I'll make this quick. A good friend of mine is a deep-sea diver for a major oil company, and they live on the bottom of the ocean for, I guess, about a day or two. They have quarters down there.
Okay.
And they were, whatever they're doing down there, they had their lights on. They saw this huge animal coming towards them, all different colors, and they just ran for the quarters, the headquarters, or their living quarters.
Yeah.
And they got in through the bottom, and to make a long story short, the thing pretty much enclosed the quarters, and the beak was on the bottom of the opening.
Okay.
And the only way that they were in there for 2 or 3 hours, it held them hostage somehow. And I don't know if this is a long tail or something like that, but the only way they got rid of the thing was to take 6 gallons of Tabasco sauce and dump it down the throat when the beak opened.
You had me maybe until the 6 gallons of Tabasco sauce. That's quite a supply to keep down the capsule at the bottom of the sea.
He said they loved it. They would eat it on everything.
Okay.
So, well, I don't know.
Edie, there's the story. Dr. Witter, what do you say? I don't know. Some kind of great squid chasing the oil divers around?
Well, actually, I wish we had more opportunity to interview some of these oil rig divers because, really, they spend a lot of time underwater and they've seen some very cool stuff. They can also be prone to tall tales, so it's a question of balancing the two. However, I do completely believe the Tabasco sauce story because they love that stuff.
The divers or the squid?
Oh, both.
Oh, gee. Everybody likes it good and hot. Dave, thanks for the story. Kate in Burlington, Vermont. Kate, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Yeah.
I have a question basically for Edie, I guess, to say what would be some future applications for this bioluminescent mimicry that was used to lure the squid?
That's a wonderful question. Thank you, Kate. I mean, the bioluminescence is so intriguing all in itself, and now you've applied it here. What else are you looking at with bioluminescence, Edie?
Well, I'd love to be able to do this a lot more in a lot of different places in the ocean because we've only explored about 5% of the ocean, and clearly I think we've been doing it wrong. And I think that there's tremendous discoveries to be made down there.
You say doing it wrong in that we've been turning on big, bright, white lights, and you say scaring away the very things we may want to greet and see.
Exactly, and we're switching over to these hydraulically powered remote-operated vehicles that are so obtrusive that I think that, you know, we're really scaring things away. We've switched away from submersibles, which are, I think, far less obtrusive. And we need to have more unobtrusive ways of exploring the ocean. And it isn't just about exploration, although for me that's plenty in and of itself. But, I mean, this is our life support systems that we're talking about and incredible life forms living in the depths. And these are creatures that have had millions of years of evolution. There could be cures for cancer. There could be all kinds of discoveries, new energy sources in the deep ocean. And what sense does it make not to explore that and protect it? And unfortunately, we're destroying it before we even know what's there.
So go gently, maybe with bioluminescence and a light touch. Richard Ellis, the reproduction of these creatures is very striking in itself and reminds us of the, I don't know, the fragility or the brevity of life. And they, as I read here, they reproduce once and then they die?
Most squid reproduce, mate once, the eggs hatch, and the parents die. It's not altogether clear that this happens to Architeuthis, the giant squid. They may breed more than once. For most other squid, and in fact most octopuses as well, that's the correct plural, by the way, for most squid and octopuses, they breed once and they die. The way giant squid breed, part of which is shown, some guarded versions of which are shown in the Discovery Channel special, is so bizarre that it just makes you realize how strange these animals really
sort
are.
Sort of sucking the male, sperm into the tentacles of the female?
They inject it wherever they can. They have they inject it into the arms, the body, any part of the female, and somehow or other, we don't quite understand how this works, somehow or other, the spermatophores, these sperm packets that are injected into the female, also, by the way, occasionally injected into males, but these sperm packets make their way somehow into the ovaries of the female where the eggs are fertilized and hatch. We don't quite know how this works, but there's a graphic in the Discovery Channel film which shows, it's a computer-generated image, no one's ever actually seen this, but it shows male and female giant squid mating. It will take your breath away, because remember, there are 16 tentacles and four long feeding tentacles all wrapped around each other.
There's a lot
of astonishing stuff. And the guy who...
Yeah, there's a lot of hello. We're just out of time right there. Richard Ellis, Edie Witter, we're so grateful to have you with us. There are wonders in the world. You bring us close to them. Edie Witter with us today from Fort Pierce, Florida at Orca. You'll see her in the Discovery Channel special. Dr. Witter, thank you very much for all of this.
Thank you, Tom.
And Richard Ellis, author of The Search for the Giant Squid. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.